always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hey, it's Friday. Great to have you along. And it's the lunch hour, and we get together each day here on Faith Radio for a program called Connecting Faith. And we have an opportunity to connect with the guests from a wide variety of backgrounds and areas of expertise, and we'll talk about important subjects and help provide some biblical understanding and principles to help connect faith to life every day. That's what we're all about here at Faith Radio. And it's good to have you tuned in. And my name is Neil Stavem. Matt Reynolds is the show producer. Grace Reif does the call screening. And we've got a Facebook page, which I can't remember right now because I'm a high-tech guy.
We have links on our
homepage,
website.
Yes.
And you can become our friend there through Facebook. Just click on the find us on Facebook. You can like the page. You can ask us questions there as well as email us at connectingfaith@faithradionet.com.
I was going to let you say it because I can never remember it. So connectingfaith@faithradionet.com. It's an opportunity to see how many letters you can use on your keyboard and sending us a note. And after you get actually the address written in, you don't really feel like writing anything more. It's
well, the questions that they do submit at both places, we will use those if people
yes,
submit
we
them.
Do. So. And you'll want to have some, you no doubt have some questions today because the subject that we're talking about today has affected and still affects, according to statistics, a third of all those attending school, some 13 million students. What about those 13 million students that are bullied every year and maybe some every day? And this is a problem that has grown so much that the president just this past month, well, you know, last month, called a gathering together, set up a conference to talk about bullying, that it's not just a harmless rite of passage, inevitably part of growing up. It's not. He spoke to a number of students, and we're going to speak to a person who we think is really one of the foremost authorities on it, an expert, and we've had him on before and appreciate his wise counsel and advice. Paul Coughlin is on the line with us. Let me introduce you to Paul. He's the founder and president of the Protectories. He founded it in 2005. Paul, of course, is an author. You've heard him talking about some of his books, No More Christian Nice Guy, or Married But Not Engaged, or No More Jellyfish Christians or Wimps. And he does a great deal of speaking. Also, I think, I don't know if he's still doing a radio show, but Paul, are you still doing the radio show?
I am not. I could hardly do it given the explosion in the Protectors
yes.
At this point.
Well, welcome, by the way. Good to have you on with us again. Thanks so much for joining us and for providing some leadership in this important area. And Paul, I guess we'll start out with those statistics. Is that reality that some 13 million students are bullied every year?
Oh, at least. Again, thanks for having me back as your guest. At least. Here's the problem with some statistics in regard to ongoing campaigns of cruelty, what we call bullying. Targets don't talk. They rarely talk. They're often full of a lot of shame, a lot of self-recrimination. They're so embarrassed by what's happening to them, and they're often so full of rage that there just comes a point that they begin to shut down. Like a lot of people who are the recipients of abuse. And so the number is probably much more than 13 million kids being bullied. And we're just focusing on the children who are being bullied. What about the bystander? Studies show that bystanders are often highly affected by what they see. They often feel great shame for their inability to help the target. Most want to help the target, but they don't know how. And most listen to fear than they do doing the right thing. So the 13 million number is probably tremendously low by the number of people who are being bullied. And then when you think about the people who are genuinely affected by bullying, that's probably about 95%, because someone's playing a role. Either they're being a bully, which is a minority of students actually are serial bullies, either they're being the target of bullying or they're a bystander and they witness the bullying take place.
Paul, you mentioned the phrase that caught my attention right away, the ongoing campaign of cruelty. Is this, in fact, when we define bullying, is that, in fact, it is an ongoing campaign?
Absolutely. And many of us, particularly my generation, probably yours as well, we really don't know what bullying is. And then also, too, frankly, many teachers aren't trained at this point. It's getting better, but they're not trained at it. many of us think that bullying has to do with conflict. We think it has to do with anger management, miscommunication, misunderstanding. In most cases, most of the time, that is not bullying. Bullying is the superior use of power, either real or assumed power, to intentionally harm another person over a period of time and for no good reason. Most targets of bullying have no real relationship to their bully. The number one group of kids bullied in most every school are going to be physically and mentally challenged kids, most of whom have no relationship to the bully. Bullying is really about the expression of disdain and contempt for another human being. It is both the language and the behavior of superiority. Bullies, we have this belief in our culture, for example, that most, if not all, children bully because they have low self-esteem, and they pick on people, they harm other people to feel better about themselves. Well, it is true, bullies do harm other people to feel better about themselves. They actually receive great pleasure and glee from what they're doing, but it's not due to low self-esteem in most cases most of the time. More and more studies are showing that bullies have normal to excessive self-esteem. Bullies feel, on average, very good about themselves, probably too good about themselves. And that helps answer a riddle in the theater of bullying, because many of us who bully, or at least not serial bullies, we wonder, how does someone think they can do that to another person? Here's the answer. They actually think they're better and more valuable than other people. Therefore, other people deserve their awful treatment.
These are amazing discussions, and I know, Paul, that your story, part of the reason the Protectors was founded, was born out of some of your personal experience. You know, I guess we've all, it seems like we've probably all gone through it at some point or another, but tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, my story is very interesting, is that when we look at bullying, what we're really talking about is a specific form of abuse. At its core, at its base, bullying is a form of intentional abuse of another person. Well, when I was growing up in my home, I was actually bullied by family members. It was the intentional campaign of cruelty against me over a long period of time. I didn't do anything to deserve the treatment. I just was unfortunate enough to be in a home where there were people who actually enjoyed the infliction of pain. They received great pleasure from it. And that's really what you get from bullies. Bullies, these aggressive perpetrators, actually very much receive pleasure and joy from inflicting pain on another person. They actually took people who have been identified as serial bullies, put them in an MRI machine, and monitor their brain activity when shown pictures or images of people being abused. And they found that some of them, the portion in their brain that lit up was actually the area that lights up when people receive pleasure. So there are some people in this world, and they're a minority, who actually receive great pleasure when pain is inflicted upon another person. We need to make a quick distinction here. Many students end up in the bully category from time to time. There's something about the exercise of destructive power that many people will experiment with. But people who tend to be grounded on a soul level will find that though there's power there and there is some level of pleasure in exercising that power, they move away from that kind of behavior, but they know that it's wrong. There's something within them that causes them to say, there's fun in sin for a season, as the Bible says. There's pleasure in sin for a season. But there are people who will move away from it. What we're really talking about here are the people who don't move away from that experience, that they continue to live in this lifestyle of inflicting pain on other people because they find such pleasure and joy and honestly glee from that type of thing. That is where the damage is, and that is where the Protectors comes in. And real quickly, what we do is we help everyone in what we call the theater of bullying change their role So we help authority, we help targets, we help bullies change their ways, and we help bystanders, but we put special emphasis on the bystanders. If your audience remembers nothing else than what I'm about to say, it's this. Authority alone cannot diminish bullying because it's highly predatory. Bullies are highly selective of who they attack, when, and how they attack. And it's very secretive. Most of it appears in front of peers, but very little of it appears in front of authority. Well, they don't want to get caught. They don't want to get in trouble. So what needs to happen is that bystanders, who are the majority of students, need to become what we call alongside standers. They need to intervene on behalf of the target, many of whom are incapable of self-rescue. Most physically, mentally challenged kids, for example, no matter what they do, are not going to be able to escape the theater of bullying unless someone intervenes. Our audience right now is probably familiar with the work of Frank Peretti. What a lot of people don't know is that he was unbelievably bullied when he was younger, and if it wasn't for the brave work of a gym teacher, and I believe that teacher's last name was Justice, because God does have a sense of humor, a sense of irony, Frank Peretti probably wouldn't have escaped the theater of bullying. Someone needed to intervene on his behalf.
We want to give our listening family an opportunity to interact with Paul Coughlin, who is an author and who is the founder and president of the Protectors. You can find out more about their great resources on the website protectors.org theprotectors.org. And we want to invite your calls today. Maybe you're in one of those categories as a bully, a bystander, a target, or an authority. And there's some great advice and counsel coming here during the rest of this program. So feel free to join in with us at 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. You can join the show. When we continue here in just a moment, I want to get back to Paul's comments. You talked about the bullying for no good reason, yet we also mentioned something about highly selective. So I want to see if we can match those up here and get some more clarification. Then we want to talk about how those bystanders can become alongside standers and what that looks like. All that and more on today's Connecting Faith. 877-93-FAITH, the number for you to join us. Connecting Faith, I'm Neil Stave. I'm connecting today with Paul Coughlin. Paul is a best-selling author, and he's also the founder and president of the Protectors, and that is an organization that helps children of all ages understand that they can not be afraid, and they get some help for bystanders and for authority and all those areas that need some help. And we're going to talk a little bit about courage and character. But, Paul, before we get on to that, I should mention, to our phone number, it's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. You have some questions about bullying, maybe an experience that you'd like to share, and we'd love to hear your story. You're welcome to join the conversation today. Paul, you mentioned early on that bullies do their terror, their campaign of cruelty for no good reason, yet they also said that the bullies are highly selective in who they choose. Is it random, or is it selective, or is it both?
Well, it feels random, but they rarely ever go after anyone their own size, so to speak, when it comes to power. And power takes many forms. You've got social power, you have financial power, you have acumen, verbal power, you have, of course, physical power. Most think about physical power. When really about 80% of bullying is verbal, not physical. It's used to humiliate, often to isolate another person. No, it's really not that random. They go after people who they're pretty sure will not push back. The number one character trait of most targets of serial bullying is that they're non-assertive. So the bully can kind of tell, usually through body language, that kid's probably not going to push back. Most bullies go shopping in September, and by October, many have already found their target. I was in Alabama working with a middle school And the principal told me, you know, just the shocking. It'd be shocking if you weren't familiar with the truth about bullying. And she said she had noticed that this one boy, about a sixth grader, was really bullying a kid in fifth grade last year, and then noticed that he wasn't picking on him anymore. So she went up to congratulate him and said, you know, that's really great. You've really decided to treat this one boy better. And he said to her, he said, oh, no. Yeah, I don't pick on him anymore. I found someone else to pick on. And he looked, you know, for someone who obviously he could get away with it. And let me give you an example. In Canada, they went to five different schools and said, identify for us a target, a bully, and some bystanders. And they went to the five different schools, and they mixed them up. So they took a bully from one school, paired them up with a target from another. They'd never met each other before, and then some bystanders from another school. Within 2 hours, every bully found every target. They began to dominate the same kid, and that's because these kids were all non-assertive. They just would not exert their feelings, their thoughts, and their will into the lives of other people. We could just basically say that they were very shy kids.
And again, it brings us to the important, the critical role of the bystanders. You talk about transforming them into what you call alongside standers. Talk about the important role of the bystander.
Yeah, the federal government, I think, to the Department of Health and Human Services, did a 10-year-long study about freedom from bullying movements or programs like ours, the Protectors, and found that they didn't do as well as everyone would like. They found that the organizations did a very good job of educating people about what bullying is really about, and they did a pretty good job of creating sympathy and empathy for the target, but found that simply people didn't act on what they knew and what they felt. And a classic Greek understanding of why that's the case is that action often doesn't come through the mind and the heart alone. It comes through another part, the part where courage resides in human capacity. And, of course, we see this in The Wizard of Oz. We see that three beings have lost a fundamental capacity, and they needed help getting it back. And so through the Protectors, what we do is we focus primarily on this third but often more mysterious capacity of what it means to be human, and that's the capacity for animation, will, strength, and especially courage. The fact is, you don't really have to tell people that bullying is wrong. Well over 85% of kids say they know it when they see it and they don't like it. And the same group of kids, more than 85%, will say that they feel great sympathy and empathy for the target. They want to help. But the fact is, most of them don't, and that's because they're afraid to get involved. And a very blue-collar definition of courage would be doing the right thing afraid. And that is what we teach kids in school. We take often passive and fearful bystanders, and we give them courage training so they can become courageous alongside standers of kids who are targets of ongoing campaigns of cruelty. We do that a number of ways in both public and private schools. We have two distinct programs, one for faith-based organizations and one for values-based or secular public school program. And we train kids how to be more courageous. And one thing we do, we call it the power of two. And what's really interesting is that firefighters don't go into battle in less than two. Most people in military don't go into the field in less than two. People jumped from the Twin Towers holding the hand of another person. Jesus sent disciples out in two. Mormon missionaries and Jehovah's Witnesses come to your door in no less than two. Well, why is that? The Greeks had a great saying. They said that only the gods are courageous in isolation. There is something about having one person standing by your side that honestly bolsters our capacity for courage. It may not be exponential to the power of 10, but it's more than double. It's amazing what it does in our lives. So we help school kids make a pact, make an agreement. We say that to find a friend, and that if you see your friend being bullied, you will defend them with assertive but nonviolent words. And then that person will do the same for you. But now here's the really great part. This is the part that can change a school. Where the two of them, when they see another kid being picked on, they will intervene on behalf of that target. And intervention can take a number of forms. Assertive but nonviolent words are probably the most effective way to do it. But if that's beyond the reach of some kids, literally just walking in, putting your arm around the kid, and escorting that child out of the theater of bullying, out of that incident of bullying, that's all you need to do. Sometimes you don't even need to use words. So by doing so, you can really change the culture of a school. Bullies or summer camp or Sunday school, the protector's curriculum was used in numerous organizations, even Boy Scouts, wherever basically youth come together. Bullies don't like to be confronted. They're by and large planning that no one will stand up to them. And so when they do, they don't know what to do, and they're really not all that brave. There's a good amount of cowardice involved because, again, they're only picking on people that they're pretty sure they're assured a victory over. So when someone comes in, they throw a monkey wrench in their plans, they don't know what to do, and they almost always basically fade into the background.
Paul Coughlin is our guest today on Connecting Faith, and we're talking about bullying. 877-933-2484 is the number. If you'd like to join our conversation, we welcome your call. Maybe a story, a situation, or just some advice that you'd like to get on how to help your kids, or maybe you're still experiencing it. 877-93-FAITH is the phone number. We'll be happy to take your call. Paul, you talked about how it can change a school and sort of a nonviolent words, the power of two, and yet we hear a lot about cyberbullying, the fact that bullying doesn't just go away when the school day is done.
No, it's the fastest growing area of bullying in the world, and it is probably the reason why we're hearing more and more about suicide due to bullying. It's girls tend to do it more than boys because you can be more anonymous and they tend to be more attracted to that side of bullying. Yeah, it's very similar to why the elderly die during a heat wave. When I was going to school, you would get picked on, you come home, your parents help you out, and you're able to get away from it. You're able to get a respite from bullying. But like Phoebe Prince of South Hadley High in Massachusetts, who took her own life and really possibly came like a Rosa Parks to this movement, because this is really the civil rights issue. This is really about human dignity. Phoebe Prince was cyberbullied while she was walking home from school. She would receive text messages on Facebook. She was attacked as well. In fact, after she died, on the memorial page, one of the seven people who are currently on state and federal charges wrote "Mission Accomplished" on her Facebook page. Well, what's happening is our children are unable to escape what we call the theater of bullying. It's 24/7 now. So like the elderly, during heat waves, they don't die from the daytime high. They die from the nighttime high. They can't get away from it. And because of that, they fatigue. Fatigue makes cowards of us all, Bear Bryant. And so as a result, these poor kids, they're losing hope because they're constantly being attacked. They can't get a respite. Martin Luther King put it in terms of racism and segregation. He called it the fatigue of despair. And it's exactly what our children are going through across this country and indeed across the world. They are simply fatiguing out. They can't get away from it. And through the protectors, what we train the targets to do is to take that information, and it's almost always what's being done to them is often illegal. You cannot threaten the person verbally or physically in writing. It's illegal. You can't do that. We cannot slander and put out libel about other people. So such targets really do need to be wise as serpents, and they need to document this kind of behavior, and then they need to act with tremendous force to defend their children against these ongoing campaigns of cruelty. And then the bystanders, the people who see these horrible things being written about other people on Facebook, all that really needs to happen is for the bystanders to say, that's wrong, that doesn't describe her at all, leave her alone, that's illegal, I'm going to give this information to the school tomorrow. You can intervene in cyberbullying as well. And listen, this is happening in Christian schools. I'm going to probably be speaking at a school here in the South this year, early next year, where a child took his life because a group of girls attacked him on Facebook and embarrassed him and threatened. There was probably a level of extortion involved as well. And so it's happening in Christian schools as well. In fact, a study came out early this year that suggested, if not highly suggested, that among certain age groups, bullying may be worse in private Christian schools than in public schools. And so we help both diminish bullying in their organizations.
Paul Coughlin's my guest. We're going to come back in just a couple minutes. Take your calls at 877-93-FAITH. Talking bullying today, talking about some solutions, some helps, some encouragement. An opportunity to develop some courage and character. 877-933-2484. You're listening to Connecting Faith. This is Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Paul Coughlin is my guest today. Paul does parenting seminars, talks for men, has written a number of great books called No More Christian Nice Guy. He co-wrote with his wife, Married But Not Engaged, also for parents, No More Jellyfish, Chickens, or Wimps. And he is founder and president of the Protectors, founded several years ago to help just stand against the bullying that seems to be growing as a problem in our nation. And, Paul, before we get to some great calls here, I want to find out maybe just a word or two about what we as parents do, our role. I mean, we talked about the bystander and the authority. Are we the authority? Or what do we do in solving or helping in the bullying?
Well, that's a great question. What we do is we get involved. The number one question I get is from parents, how do I make it to where my kid is not a target? Well, two things. They need to behave in a more confident manner. Again, the number one character trait that bullies look for is kids who are non-assertive. So we need to help them with more assertive body language. Number two is we need to help them intervene and to stand up for bullying when they see it. You know, I will talk to, hundreds of parents per year whose child is being bullied, and they are very indignant that other kids who saw it happen didn't intervene. And I understand that because I've had a child who was bullied as well. But then when I ask, well, do you expect your child to stand up for kids who are being bullied, I almost always just get a blank stare. For some reason, we are expecting other children to behave in a way that we do not expect our own children to behave. And until we overcome this great misconception, until particularly Christian kids are expected to intervene on behalf of people who are literally having their psychological skin seared, I mean, their lives are being destroyed before our eyes. And until we get intervention on behalf of kids of goodwill, and particularly kids of faith, we're not going to see this situation get any better. We all know that, particularly in the workplace, that when you stand up to a bully, they almost always back down. But you've got to stand up. We have to use appropriate force, nonviolent but assertive force, in denouncing this antisocial, destructive, and at times evil behavior that is among us. What is remarkable to me is that in many times we think as Christians that we have to go to another country in order to represent Christ. You know what? Our kids could be incredible lights in their school today, this week. All they have to do is stand up for kids who are being picked on. It's an incredible witness. The world respects people who work on behalf of justice. We have a remarkable opportunity to be an incredible witness to the world by having our children stand up for people who are being picked on, bullied, destroyed, really, for no good reason, only because the person doing it receives pleasure from doing it. If they did it to an adult, they would be in jail. And in fact, bullies, children identified as a serial bully as young as third grade, and they don't stop, they just continue. They followed them into adult life and found that they are five times more likely to commit a major crime. I'm talking felony, jail time by their middle 20s. They're four times more likely to abuse their future spouse and their future children. In many cases, prison is a convention for schoolyard bullies.
Paul, that kind of leads us into our first question from our listeners, 877-93-FAITH. We're going to go to Susan, who's been listening in on Faith 900, KTIS. Susan, you're on with Paul Coffin. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, thank you. You hit on many points that and conclusions that I have come to and agree with, and you answered my question regarding what these young people, how things play out as they become adults. And I would just like to comment that my son experienced bullying in two different Catholic schools, and I know that teachers witnessed it most of the time. Nothing was ever done. And one school in particular, it was a jock coach that I think he got pleasure in standing by watching my son get bullied. And my son is 6'2", 245, and he's a college graduate and very bright. So he wasn't picked on because he was a punk or a coward. And he finally stood up for himself and just placed one well-planted blow, and the kid was flat on his back and unconscious. And that ended it with that particular incident that had gone on for actually probably a couple of years. He was being spat on it on the bus stop, and, you know, it just continued. And then there was a couple of other confrontations that he had and challenged the kid. And but as far as bullying is concerned, I think that it is a certain type of evil that is in some people. And
now we'll let Paul maybe just react to that, Susan. I appreciate your story.
Yeah, thank you very much, Susan. No, it is. I mean, when you get the opportunity to speak with targets of serial bullying the way we do, we receive letters weekly, and then at conferences, obviously face-to-face conversations with parents and students that will just absolutely break your heart. I mean, if you didn't believe in evil before, you would after these. You know, you read these letters and speak with these parents. It's surprising that some people make it through, to tell you the truth, as to what the things that have actually been done to them, the level of humiliation that they have had to endure. It is indeed evil, and it's very similar, you know, for younger people listening right now. The movie Lord of the Rings, the trilogy and the books are an amazingly instructive. We look at the character of Gollum, where the ring perverts him, and the ring really does provide tremendous pleasure. I mean, it's an amazing thing, what this ring represents and what it does to the person's soul. But you find in the character of Gollum, where every time the ring is put on, or they think about the ring, they fiddle with the ring, becomes less of a person and more of a tragic figure. Well, that is what you have with bullying. Let's make no mistake about it. They receive great pleasure from what they're doing to another person. It's not self-defense. It's an attack. And in that attack, they love it, most of them anyway. And so, but in the process, they become less human. And in, it's very, very clear in Scripture, there's something in some people that the more they do it, the more they thrive on it, and they enjoy it, and they want to do it more and more. That is the nature of sin. And it literally does lead to death in many, many different ways. And if it doesn't lead to bodily death, it leads to the death of the spirit in both the bully and oftentimes in the target. And let's not forget the bystander. Many studies show that bystanders are often filled with shame and guilt for not stepping up and doing the right thing. And in fact, it's one of the things that people resent the most, or rather regret the most as adults, is that they didn't have the courage to stand up to the bully and stand up to the target when they were in school, and they can't forget it. And there's a reason why, is because cowardice is a sin. Revelation 21:8 is very clear that God puts cowards in the same category as liars and thieves. And it's a sin. We give into it. And it's hardly on our spiritual radar, unfortunately. I'm very glad to say, though, that some of that is changing. We are working with faith-based organizations, Christian schools, Catholic schools. We work with both to help them implement this unique program that puts courage back on our spiritual radar, because it's not going to change. unless the bystander becomes an alongside stander. Our caller earlier said that the school didn't do anything about it. That's probably not the case. Most schools do something about it. But given the predatory, secret nature of bullying, authority honestly doesn't see it many times because the bully doesn't want them to see it. I was in Loudonville, New York this week, and spoke with a teacher who said, I had just turned my back in the class. I took two steps, and right where I was, a kid was thrown against the wall right when I turned my back. And she turned around, and of course it wasn't an accident. The bully waited for her back to be turned before he threw the other kid against the wall. That tells you it's not anger management. If you had anger management issues, and some kids do, you would just attack anyone at any time because you have a problem with your anger. Bullies don't have anger management problems. Bullies have ego management problems. They really think they're very important. And in many cases, we need to stop calling it bullying and call it what it really is, pre-criminal behavior. There is not an adult listening right now who would put up with the level of behavior that we expect our kids to put up with. We would be suing people. If it happened in the workplace, we would be suing them right away.
And as you said, the prison yards are kind of homeroom for many bullies that start out.
They are on Facebook. There was a guy named Brad wanted to befriend me recently, and I said, "You have to be kidding me." He was the biggest bully in our school. And I called a friend of mine named Kelly, and I said, "Kelly, can you believe Brad wants to be my friend on Facebook?" I said, "He made life miserable for everyone." He said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "Brad has changed. Brad went to jail." And Brad received, fortunately, you could say, the level of humility that he needed to receive, because there's always someone bigger and stronger and nastier than you, and you'll find that person in prison. And he went through some very difficult times, and he was crushed in prison, and he changed his ways. Well, isn't it sad that we have to wait for someone to go to prison in order to help them?
We want out some help for Tracy in just a minute. She's hanging on and has some questions about her daughter being bullied. We'll do that in about 60 seconds as we talk more with Paul Coughlin. Paul is the founder and the president of the Protectors. And again, we'll link up their website on our Connecting Faith page. It's theprotectors.org, faith-based ministry that's providing some help and some training for this big problem of bullying. And if you haven't experienced it, then you're probably a rarity. But we're going to talk a little bit about how we can build up courage some more and offer some help for mom waiting online. And do that in just a moment and take your call as well at 877-93-FAITH. Glad to have you tuned in. It's Friday. It's Connecting Faith. Talking bullying today. Lots of problems in the world, but bullying has wide-ranging implications and long-ranging implications as well. I've been talking a little bit about it today with Paul Coughlin, and we're from the Protectors. We're taking your calls. Tracy has been waiting, listening to Faith 1190 in Madison. Tracy, tell us a little bit about your daughter. You're on with Paul.
Yes. I have a daughter that's in second grade, and she has two, would call it bullies, but she calls them her best friends. And I'm concerned with that because they're not nice. She doesn't stand up to them, so they can do whatever they want and just puts her down. And so just yesterday, she was on the tire swing, and they were spinning her, and they wouldn't stop, and they wouldn't listen to her. They're supposed to be friends, and she got sick, and she had to go home for the rest of the day.
Now, Paul, what's
how do I?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tracy.
Yeah, she's got to learn to stand up to them. She needs to be able to use appropriate, assertive, but nonviolent words, usually against such kids. She's got to use appropriate level of force. It's very difficult for Christians. We tend to think sometimes we're the world's doormat. We're not allowed to stand up for ourselves. And the scriptures that talk in terms of us turning the other cheek and allowing things to happen to us are almost always in relation to faith, that people are being persecuted for their faith. Hardly any Christian kids today are being persecuted for their faith. They're being persecuted because others know they can take advantage of them. So the sooner our kids learn how to stand up to bullying behavior, the better off they're going to be later in life. And it's almost always an issue of courage. They know what's happening to them is disrespectful and demeaning and wrong and humiliating. But it's just that they have a very difficult time finding the courage necessary to defend their own value. So we recommend that you would coach your child during those opportunities to give them the words that they need to say before the event even happens, and to say it in a certain way with some level of confidence. Usually what happens with such kids, the shy kids, when they do become more assertive, they tend to go overboard and they tend to scream and yell. They become volcanic. And adults do the same way. It's very passive-aggressive behavior. They need to say it in an assertive way, so they need to say it that is in a way that is strong, to yell, and they don't whimper, and they make effective eye contact with such people. Bullies will almost always back down when an appropriate level of force is used, and so they're going to need coaching with that. Let me give an example from our life. One of our kids was really shy, and he wanted to get a candy bar, but he didn't want to talk to a stranger to pay for it. And I just say, well, buddy, I guess you don't want it that bad. So we would force him into the world. We would force him to have conversations with people I didn't really want to have conversations with. But after a while, he realized he wasn't going to die, and in fact, he grew stronger. So our children need to be pushed into the world at age-appropriate opportunities to realize that when they assert their will, targets have a very difficult time asserting themselves, that not only they're not going to die, good things are actually going to happen to them in the process. And then also we need to really ask ourselves a fundamental question: are we overparenting our children? We are now in a generation that has achieved a very bad mile marker. We are now in the position where we have taken many of the ordinary bumps and bruises out of life, the kind of things that kids need to grow stronger and bigger. And we as parents, we think we're doing the right thing for them. We're not. We're actually making our children more fragile when we take the everyday bumps and bruises out of life. Overparented kids are often high targets for bullying, and our book, No More Jellyfish, Chickens, or Wimps, is designed to particularly look at overparenting, and it's really big in Christian communities. I mean, you're often felt as if you're a awful parent if you don't overparent your kids in Christian communities. We need to step back. We need to let them live their lives a bit more, because when your will is constantly thwarted and overturned, which many parents are doing, that makes very slavish, docile kids ideal targets for serial bullying.
Well, before we get to our next caller, Darla, has been waiting. I'm just curious to know, is a physical or a violent response ever appropriate? I think one of our earlier callers said, a well-placed physical response kind of took care of things. And we've seen the YouTube video, the kid finally having enough, and we all kind of cheer for him.
Yeah. Oh, I remember, yes. Yeah. Casey, the young man from Australia.
Australia.
We all felt for him. When you have people constantly punching you and hurting you, if you in school, you're better off, honestly, walking away. Well, in all cases, you're better off walking away, if at all possible. Problem is, recently we just saw on television yesterday, someone videotaped four girls beating up this one girl. Unless you're trained, there's going to be very little you can do. In those cases, you really are better off yelling for help, calling people, yelling, help, I'm being beat up. Looking at a person individually, we've all heard about these stories of people not getting help from a group of people. What you really need to do, our kids need to be trained to look one person in the eye and say, help me. as opposed to yelling to an entire group. You need to go to an individual. That is usually what it takes to help that person to become an alongside stander. And if they're an adult, most of the time those kids will go away.
All right. Let's go to Darla waiting in the Sioux Falls. You're on with Paul Coffin. Go ahead.
Hi. As somebody who was bullied when I was a child, and I know a lot of other people who were bullied, it seems like with Frank Freddy, he had intervention, and that changed his life, and he was able to move forward from where he is. But I think that too many people don't get the help. They put up with it. They don't do anything violent. They just go through life and believe what has been told to them, that they're losers, that they're worthless, that they can't accomplish anything, that, you know, they're a big loser, and so therefore it perpetuates because it's stuck in their head. What the bully has said to them becomes a self-perpetuating prophecy that they get a possibility of a new position, a better position, and just about the time they're ready to go for it, they hear this voice in their head that says, "You loser, you can't do that." And it just seems that we're creating bullying. If we don't stop the bullying and help both the bully and the bullied, we're creating generations of people who are antithetical to each other, and some are the oppressed and some are the oppressors.
You're absolutely right. Let me fortify that position. We do. We need to help them both. Unfortunately, bullies are not very interested in peace, love, and understanding. And that's the case really with fairly arrogant, prideful people, and that's what we're talking about here. Bullies don't need to feel better about themselves on average. They actually need to feel some humility. The Apostle Paul said we need to have a sober estimation of who we are, and sober just means accurate. People with low self-esteem think too little of themselves, but bullies often think a little too much about themselves. They need to have a more sober understanding of who they are. The Wesley Society in Australia followed targets of serial bullying into adult life. So kids who just were constantly picked on and bullied, they followed them into adult life, and it's an awful study. They found that 7 out of 10 were unable to create lasting adult relationships. They specifically struggled with anger management, resentment, and trusting of other people. And resentment, as people in AA will tell you, is one of the main things that keeps people addicted to alcohol and other drugs. It is unbelievably destructive. It is a death by another kind. It literally does crush their spirits when they move into adult life. And your caller couldn't be more right on that. They need our help. But you know what? And what really we need to get away from is we'll see these celebrities on television, Beyoncé and Aguilera and others, we'll talk about how when they were bullied when they were younger and it made them stronger. Well, I'm not sure that's the case. I know that they're now celebrities and they're loaded, and so we would say that they've been successful. But if you actually look at their private lives and the decisions they make, many times that bullying has followed them. The woman who took the world by storm for England's Got Talent, American Idol's England version. I forget the lady's name, but she did have a bit of a mental disability. She was bullied for a very long time, and even as a star has actually suffered a mental breakdown because she's never quite got over, her brother said, never quite got over the bullying that took place.
Susan Boyle, I think that was.
Susan Boyle, yeah, that's so it.
We just have a minute left, Paul, but I'll let you finish the thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah. So for every celebrity that comes on and say it made them stronger, I would tell you we could point to tens of thousands of others who it didn't make them stronger. You know, in church we often say things like, well, that which doesn't kill us makes us stronger. We're thinking we're quoting the Bible. We're not. That's Friedrich Nietzsche, and he was an enemy of the Bible. So children are literally being torn apart, and if they stay alive during this difficult time, there's a certain part of them that does die inside. And when the caller earlier talked about lies, she's absolutely right. The bully really does lie to the target and wants the target to believe things that simply aren't true. They want them to believe, for example, that no one likes them. They want them to believe that they are alone and isolated. And many of them are being told literally, why don't you go home and kill yourself?
That's a rather sobering way in which to end the program, but I know that there is great resources and help available on your website, so I want to just encourage people to check that out, theprotectors.org, theprotectors.org. Lots of opportunity there to find hope and help and practical ways that we can develop courage and character for life. Paul Coughlin is my guest. Paul, thank you so much for your good words today and for the great work you're doing. It's great to visit with you.
Great to be with you. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. We have a powerful discussion coming up on Monday's program when we spend some time talking with Rob Bell. He will talk about his new book, the controversial book, Love Wins, Heaven, Hell, and the Eternal Destiny of Everyone Who's Ever Lived. That's a big topic. We'll jump in Monday on Connecting Faith. See you then.